You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Don't just watch the draft, play the draft with the Cleveland Browns for your chance to win incredible prizes. Play the draft. It's a new free fantasy NFL draft game, a great one. You're going to have a blast with it and actually find it fascinating to play that role of general manager. The first contest is live now. Sign up at clevelandbrowns.com today. Again, watch your players' stock rise and fall just like you're watching real stocks. The green arrow's going up, the red arrow's going down. Keep those green arrows going up, and we'll see maybe a green arrow moved significantly higher after yesterday's pro day in College Station, Texas, where Johnny Manziel had his pro day, the former Texas A&M quarterback. Joining us now, the man who hosted that workout coverage for NFL Network. He's a great friend and a great friend of the show and knows his stuff inside and out. Paul Burmeister on the line. Paul, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Vic. Thanks for having me on again.
Great to hear your voice and to watch. We watched yesterday, of course, the analysis, Kurt Warner and Mike Mayock and you guys breaking it all down from College Station. And you captured the event in ways that I think it needed to be captured, because it got much bigger than a pro day. But when all was said and done, Paul, do you feel enough of the football was accomplished, the football stuff, for sake of a better term, by Johnny Manziel to move the needle for him?
I really do, Vic. I think it was moved at least a standard deviation or two away from the mean that he had when he walked into the building. And, I mean, yeah, it had a different kind of vibe than other pro days. It had an electricity and kind of a game day feel. There's a former president there. He's got music playing. I mean, it was the most well-attended pro day I've seen. And he's the most exciting college player that we've seen for a long time. So you had all that anyway, but strip that away, and I think he had a quarterback out there who let everybody know that his natural passing gifts are a lot better than most of us thought. I've never seen him throw in person, and I always try to maintain one word when I go to these pro days, and that's perspective. And I tried to remind myself a week and a half ago when I was at Louisville watching Teddy Bridgewater, and he wasn't putting the ball where he wanted to put it consistently for that entire 20 to 30 minutes. And I was telling myself, okay, this kid still has great tape. There's still all those compliments about him that I heard before coming into this building and watching him struggle. So let's not knock him down too many pegs just because he had a poor pro day. And then on the other side, I've been reminding myself the last 24 hours, this was just a kid throwing against air in a scripted workout with no pressure, no defense. Don't go too overboard on it. But I also know what I saw, and I've seen Derek Carr throw the last week. I saw Blake Bortles. I saw Bridgewater, and now I've seen Manziel. And he's the most gifted passer in this class. Now, maybe Blake Bortles can wind it up and give you a little more velocity. Derek Carr was really, really polished and mature about the entire thing. I thought he was great, too. But you look at every kind of pass outside the pocket, short, deep, intermediate, falling away, stepping into it, the whole thing. And I want to stress the deep ball. I had no idea Johnny Manziel threw this pretty in this perfect of a deep pass and getting it out there 55 yards, no issues at all. I think he's the most gifted passer in this class. And you combine that with what he can do outside the pocket, it doesn't erase the doubts. And it doesn't erase the fact that he was just doing it against air yesterday. But I do think there's tremendous upside with him. He's a much more gifted passer, short, intermediate, and deep than I thought he was.
These are the type of insights you're going to get from Paul Burmeister, NFL Network. Make sure you follow him as well, at Paul W. Burmeister. Paul, it's Michael Regei at the Brown Studios in Cleveland. Great to have you with us. You played the position, and I was intrigued by you and Kurt Warner and some of your assessments yesterday. Paul, as we know, for all the things that you just mentioned that were over the top, the questions about Manziel, can he make all the throws from the pocket? Will he look to somewhat confine himself instead of extending plays and trying to keep those alive out on the edges as he did with such a tremendous success at Texas A&M? What's your gut feel about that, Paul? I mean, I know yesterday can't give you a sense of that, but
sure.
Does your gut say that he can adhere to what he's going to have to in the NFL to be successful?
My gut says yes. I think he can. Now, it's, you know, it's going to come down to how he accepts coaching and what the game looked like to him on Sundays from the pocket. And that's all a huge guess for as much as we study it and the GMs and coaches are studying it 100 times more than I am. It's still a guessing game. Whether he goes first overall or slips late in the first round, somebody's taking a leap of faith that this guy can do, can play in the pocket in a way that he didn't have to at Texas A&M. And that's what's so tricky about his evaluation, because while you want to benefit from everything he can do outside the pocket, you want to draw up more plays outside the pocket than you ever have if you're an offensive coordinator. You're silly not to if you have this kind of talent in Johnny Manziel inside your building. But you also want to harness it a bit. I mean, if he, let's just throw a number out there. If he left the pocket fairly early in college 15 times a game or 12 times a game, you probably want him to do it 6 or 8, maybe 10 times a game in the NFL, just based off of, I mean, he's not a very big guy. You don't want him to get hurt. So you want to benefit from that, yet you also want to harness it, and you want to develop what we saw yesterday. He gave us a glimpse that he can be awfully good from the pocket, that all the skill set is there. Now, I get back to now what I said a moment ago. What's the game going to look like to him on Sunday? Yep. And when the first read is not there and he feels a little pressure, can you coach him to shuffle in the pocket and look for number two before he sprints out of the pocket and tries to make six people miss and throw it behind his back and do all those things that we know he can do? Yeah. And that's the leap of faith. And I was talking to Mayock before and after the workout yesterday, and we were reminding ourselves, the biggest question he has, can he be consistently good in the pocket when he feels pressure and not leave all the time? No matter what he did yesterday, can't change that question. Right. So I think teams were encouraged yesterday, but they still have some real questions and issues to wrestle with.
He is Paul Burmeister from NFL Network, and you can follow him on Twitter, at Paul, W-B-U-R-M-E-I-S-T-E-R. So, Paul, let's broaden the lens and look at what you said. You saw Teddy Bridgewater. You saw Derek Carr. We know Blake Bortles did his pro day as well and also threw at the combine. Give me a big picture sense now, though, of the quarterback position for this draft and how you sort of see it falling.
Well, let's take those four guys that I've been fortunate enough to get to see the last 9 or 10 days. Teddy Bridgewater, it's easy to take shots at him right now, especially after seeing Johnny Manziel and Derek Carr and Blake Bortles. And, you know, these guys who are warranting first-round consideration at quarterback and top-10 consideration, they ought to look like Johnny did yesterday. They should do what Derek did last Friday at Fresno. You should come out, have a handful of balls maybe touch the ground. You should have maybe one pass in 60 or 70 that comes out of your hand the wrong way. You ought to really impress. I mean, this is your day. You have a crazy amount of talent throwing the ball. You drew up the workout yourself. You're on your home turf. It should look really good. And Teddy Bridgewater didn't do that. So he's going to have to overcome that. He's going to have a chance to. All kinds of teams are going to come see him in Louisville and work him out there, put him through their own workout, and hopefully he can bounce back. He's still the same guy that many people who do this for a living would say he has the best tape the last 2 years of any of these quarterbacks. He's the most pro-ready in terms of the reads he was making in college. That wasn't erased by a poor pro day workout, but that poor workout is still fresh in everyone's mind. So he's going to have to overcome that behind closed doors with teams over the next few weeks. Blake Bortles, I saw him a couple days later. I was expecting to be wowed because everybody was talking about this guy's got the best potential in the draft. He's got the best NFL body, 6'5", 230. He's going to have the best arm. And he was good. It wasn't Matthew Stafford or Andrew Luck-like in terms of a workout, but it was good. If you like Blake Bortles, what you love is this guy in 3 or 4 years, when he develops into a man with all that raw ability he has right now, we think he's going to be great. So you're buying into the upside with Blake Bortles. His workout was good. It wasn't great. I thought Derek Carr was a little better. Derek threw the ball better than I thought he was going to. I called a couple of his games at Fresno State. I've been at his practices. I know him pretty well. But what stood out to me is this is just a really polished, mature passer who's very comfortable with who he is. You watch him drop back and make any kind of throw. You just get the feeling he's been doing this his entire life, which he has been. So I think Derek is further along right now than Blake Bortles. Very similar ability. The people who like Blake will say, in 2 or 3 years, he's going to be better because he's just not at that point of his development yet. I think Johnny Manziel is the best one of the bunch. What I saw yesterday solidified it for me because I saw that he's a much more gifted downfield passer than I thought he was going to be, A. And B, I think he throws it better than the other guys in this class. And we've seen them all at the East-West game, at the Senior Bowl, and their pro days. And I think he's the most gifted passer. And more important than that, guys, I think in this draft, when you look at the top 10 of a class that's as talented as any we've seen in the last 30 years, you better give a GM a reason to fall in love with you and embrace what could happen on Sundays if he's going to pass up Jadeveon Clowney, or if the Browns at 4 are going to pass up Khalil Mack or Sammy Watkins or Greg Robinson, whoever else is available at a position not named quarterback. You better be great in this top 10 to make a team feel convinced that they're going to take the risk of a quarterback instead of taking an excellent position player outside of the QB spot. And I think Johnny Manziel, while there's still plenty of issues, there's still plenty of reasons to make the argument I wouldn't do it, I think he has more qualities to embrace and reasons to think this could be special on Sundays than the other guys.
Know you're enjoying the insights with Paul Burmeister. We're delighted to have him from the NFL Network. Paul, some buzz surrounding Jimmy Garoppolo, the young man from Division II Eastern Illinois. Have you had a chance to see him, and how big of a leap of faith would it be there? Paul, there's conversation, as you know, maybe into the first round, late first round guy. What kind of leap of faith would that have to present for a football team to pull the trigger there on Garoppolo?
Yeah, he's a guy I like a lot. I think late first, though, is probably a little rich. I think his window ought to open up in the second round. And my knowledge of him came that East-West Shrine week.
Mm-hmm.
And I got down there, I think, on a Thursday or Friday, and Mayock had already been there. Mike called me, as he always does when he's there. And he's like, you got to get down here and see this Garoppolo kid. And just right away, you see him throw one ball. He's got a really, really quiet lower body, a compact release. It's quick. It's consistent. It comes out quickly. I would say maybe even more quick and compact than any other quarterbacks. And that doesn't make him the best in this class, but he's got a really, really intriguing release. He was really good against great teams this year, against the top teams in 1AA. He played I know he caught Urban Meyer's eye with how well he played against San Diego State. I think he's legit, and I would, if you don't get one in the first round, if you want one to invest in later, I think second, third round is a great spot for him. I'd be a little surprised if he snuck into the first, but based off of his compact release and his ability to get it out there quickly with accuracy, I like him. I don't quite like him in the first.
We're visiting with Paul Burmeister, NFL Network. Paul, just a couple other quick things just to hit with you here, but some breaking news that I know you're aware of, the Eagles releasing wide receiver DeSean Jackson. A statement that I saw tweeted by NFL on ESPN, just reading in part. First, I would like to thank the Eagles organization, the Eagles fans, City of Philadelphia for my time in Philly. I would also like to thank Coach Andy Reid for bringing me in. Secondly, although Reid's name is misspelled here, so I'm a little shaky on this, but they did post this, and it says, I'd like to address the misleading and unfounded reports that my release has anything to do with any affiliation that has been speculated surrounding the company I keep off the field. I would like to make it very clear I am not, never have been part of any gang. Kind of a, you know, interesting statement to mention. There have been questions as to why DeSean Jackson would be released, all that talent, but you know, there's money involved here too, about I think a $10 million odd payment I saw somewhere along the line. Paul, just your thoughts on his availability and where do you think it could lead to?
Yeah, I did another radio show earlier this hour, and you know, that DeSean Jackson came up, and I said, hey, you know, let's be careful about the gang speculation. People who know a lot more about whether this is true or not true are going to fill us in here in the upcoming days and weeks. I do think that the fact that the Eagles are willing to part ways with him, in addition to the money, and I think that's a good point you bring up, Vic. We can't forget about that. But it says a lot about what the Eagles want inside their locker room in terms of a leader. And I don't know what he's doing or not doing off the field, but I do know there's always been issues about the kind of work ethic kind of guy that he is and those sort of things. And if the Eagles are willing to part ways with the one thing everybody wants, and that's a playmaker. I mean, no matter what system you run, and no matter what background you come from, you can always hear a coach talk about, we want a guy who can make plays. And DeSean Jackson can make anybody miss on any given Sunday. And he's been doing it the last 6 years. It's a rare and unique and special talent. And he produces a lot, a lot of yards and a lot of big plays. And the fact that they're willing to let him walk out the door says a lot about how they feel about him. Now, I don't know if it's connected to what he's doing off the field or how he is in the locker room or what he is or isn't doing in meeting rooms. I don't know. I just know that in general, my number one feeling is, wow, this is a rare playmaker that they're letting walk out the door.
And Paul, last thing is you've heard the speculation reports that the Houston Texans looking to trade that top overall pick, but there's been specific speculation that they would make a deal with Buffalo that would move from the 9th pick to the number 1 overall pick. John McClain from the Houston Chronicle says or tweets, no way the Texans trade with the Bills to move down to 9th, for whatever that's worth.
Well, every year, every team that won always says they're open for business. And, again, with the talent in this class, I mean, what the Texans would be able to get in terms of picks, they would be able to get a king's ransom if they wanted to part ways with that one. But on the other side, you have your own pick of all that talent, all those positions. I'm not sure that you want to give that up just to get a bunch of other picks in this class and the next class, because who knows, next year's class may not be nearly as deep as this one. But
sure.
I respect John a lot. I listen to what John has to say, but I'm sure there'll be a number of stories like that throughout the next few weeks.
Yeah, we got a little time between now and the draft.
Yeah.
Paul, thank you so much for joining us and for all those great insights, and we look forward to visiting with you again, my friend.
Always good to talk to you, Vic. Thanks.
Paul Burmeister, NFL Network, joining us on the line on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. At the top of the hour, we are going to hear from another national analyst. He is Sal Palantonio of ESPN, will be with us. In the meantime, it's yours truly, Vic Carucci, with the great Michael Regei. The two of us are going to take your calls at 216-578-0850. We'll get into some of your tweets into this show as well. We've got so much to get through here. At Browns underscore daily, tweet us. Listen to the CBD.
And try to change my mind, not intentionally.